You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Los Angeles Dodgers. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com. I am joined by my colleague, Ken Gernick, who covers the Dodgers for MLB.com. And I guess we kind of have to start with what everybody's sort of been talking about recently, which is that goofy three-error play that the Dodgers experienced against the Padres on Monday. These are the kinds of things that are really, really funny when you're up by six, and then when it's over, you're still up by four. Mostly, I saw from what I was reading, people were basically laughing it off. These are also things that if it happens to a team like the Brewers or somebody who's watching their season get flushed down the toilet, these things wouldn't be so funny. So, Ken, what were you thinking when this whole thing was going on and watching this unfold and sort of the team's reaction when it was over?
Well, the Dodgers have had a history in recent years of being pretty sloppy defensively. They've actually played better this year in the second half. And as Tom Mattingly said, they actually played a really good game last night, except for that one play. So it was great for the highlight reels. You know, it has no meaning in the race. But, you know, if you're looking for a good laugh, then watch it several times. You know, but the Dodgers spent a lot more time last night talking about Clayton Kershaw's 18th win and the fact that they added a half game onto their lead and got a little closer to clinching. So I think that might have been a little more important in the clubhouse, but I know from the fans' view, it was funny to watch.
I mean, there's things that you don't see every day. And, you know, sometimes they just happen. And, again, I mean, because the team's doing so well. And just some of the things I'm reading, it seems like Don Mattingly, I mean, he's always very even-keeled and he's not ever going to, you know, win the award for the most excitable manager in baseball. Seems to be just very steady when he's talking to the media, and very steady when he's in the dugout. He's been in a kind of a good mood lately. Do you get that impression from him that he's feeling pretty good about where the team is right now and where they're kind of settling in as the stretch run continues?
Well, yeah, and even on that play, you know, he cited the fact that even though all these throws went wild, the guys were in the right position to back up to make those throws, and maybe earlier in the year and in previous seasons, they wouldn't even have been backing up properly. So he does feel that they're playing sharper, crisper. They're doing the right things for the most part. They're throwing to the right bases, and they're not beating themselves. Except on that one isolated play, they've played pretty clean lately. And, not beating yourself is a key to not only winning a division, but in the postseason, those mistakes seem to be magnified. And so he's looking for his club to sharpen its game. And for the last month or so, he feels they have, especially now that they've gotten back most of their injured players.
Yeah, and that's pretty good timing. I was reading an interesting article that you had on the Dodgers website, just sort of what's going on with the relief staff. Two emerging relievers that are making a case for not only getting quite a bit of playing time, but you might see them in some pretty crucial situations, Carlos Frias and Pedro Baez. So they might even see themselves sharing some time with some, or maybe even taking a few innings away from some of the more familiar names that we've seen. How is that? How do you see that sort of shaking out? And is that just to continue through the regular season, or are these guys also candidates to be on the postseason roster? Forgive me for not knowing all of that.
Well, you know, Mattingly seems to be pretty loyal to his veterans through July. Come August, he seems to want to go with the hot hand. And I think he learned that from Joe Torre, if he didn't already know that from his playing days. And at that point, it's about winning and not hurting feelings. You can't worry about that. So, whether it means that Andre Ethier goes to the bench or even Yasiel Puig goes to the bench, he's not producing and he hasn't been, that's what he'll do. He put in Jock Peterson, who hadn't played a minute in the major leagues, and he gave him three or four starts. And so the same thing has happened in the bullpen in that in the seventh and eighth inning, Mattingly's been struggling to find the right setup combination to get to Kenley Jansen. And, lo and behold, he calls up a couple of these hard-throwing kids in Pedro Baez and Carlos Frias, and what he has mentioned that he likes about them, in addition to the fact that they're now throwing strikes, which you can't always count on from rookies, but they have live arms. So they can overcome a mistake, a mislocated pitch. If it's going 97 miles an hour, it's still hard to catch up to. He's got Brian Wilson and J.P. Howell. They've been setting up lately, and they can't overcome a mislocated pitch. They just don't throw hard enough. So those other two rookies have kind of worked their way into some important innings. And you've got a bullpen that's had a disappointment in Chris Perez and disappointment in Brandon League. And so the rookies are finding their way into these games down the stretch and very well could find their way onto the postseason roster.
Some of those guys, I mean, really, they end up being these huge keys in the postseason, like people that you weren't even talking about 2 months ago or 1 month ago. I mean, we've seen that happen a lot before, where especially from the pitching standpoint, just having not having so much mileage on the arms, I would think, can really pay dividends in the postseason, and having not had so much stress, not only mileage like over long periods of time, but even just over one season. And so you get some of these young kids in, and if I guess if they can handle sort of a postseason pressure, and maybe being sort of clueless might help even a little bit when you come to an environment like that in October.
Right, and I think you also have to consider the opponents in this. I think when a batter hasn't seen a pitcher, it gives a pitcher a slight advantage. I know it could work the other way around, but I think in situations that you're talking about, maybe a guy has a funky delivery, he's deceptive, he hides the ball, whatever it is, if a hitter hasn't, you know, you can hear about scouting reports and watch video, but until you're standing in the box, you have to watch that ball react, see where it comes from. You just can't duplicate that. I think sometimes these call-up pitchers kind of catch the hitters a little bit off balance and by surprise. So I think you might be seeing some of that right now, too.
Well, it'd be interesting. And let's talk just briefly on Josh Beckett, who needs surgery to repair his labrum, which I think we all knew, and for months and months of rehab. He's mulling retirement, and he seems to be pretty open about this, too, as far as talking about this. And what's amazing about Beckett is he's only 34 years old, but he started his major league career when he was 21. I remember when he was just that little baby-faced kid and making his debut in 2001. But over 2,000 innings pitched, 13 seasons. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on that arm. So it's looking kind of bleak for him from what he says and the extent of what this surgery would be. So I guess it's not that shocking that he's really sort of accepting that retirement might be something that he has to do.
Yeah, he almost sounds, I don't know if eager would be the right word, but he doesn't seem to be fearing retirement. You know, along with all those innings, he's got a lot of money in the bank, too. Made a lot of money over his career. He doesn't need to play. And not that he doesn't enjoy the competition. I think he still does. But he doesn't enjoy the fact that his body's breaking down. And once it starts, sometimes there's no stopping it, and I think that's what he's looking at. And with that comes, you know, hours and weeks and months of rehab, and that can get old. And I think sometimes, you know, when you have a young family and you got $100 million in the bank, the thought of another operation and another 3 or 4 months of rehab just isn't real appealing, and it doesn't seem to be to him. So I think he's already decided he's not coming back. He hasn't announced it. He's leaving himself a little wiggle room, but I think the Dodgers are proceeding as if he won't be back. And his tone sounds like he's accepted the fact that he won't be back. So, you know, he's had a great career. He's done a little bit of everything, and it was, you know, especially nice coming off the surgery that he had last year, missed almost the entire season. He was able to come back, pitch well in April and May when Clayton Kershaw wasn't in the rotation. And also when Ryu went out on the disabled list, he delivered some big starts for them. He was only 6-6, but his ERA was under 3. And he was able to throw a no-hitter and add that to his resume. So he's had a great career. He had a really good first half. It's just unfortunate ending that he wasn't able to finish it off.
It's amazing because I find that whole thing just fascinating, just players after retirement, you know, what they have to go through. And And like you said, I mean, he's got so much money in the bank, he doesn't need to be pitching. But at the same time, like, he's going to be looking at being 35 years old and having to occupy a lot of his time between now and 40 years from now, you know, 45 years from now. And so, I mean, you've been around this game for a long time, and I'm sure you've talked to a lot of former players. That's a tough thing, the tough transition as they, you know, for a year it's great, and maybe even two for a guy that's got to overcome, you know, pain and injury. But after that, they sort of have to figure out what to do, and there's no really easy answer. I mean, there's broadcasting, there's coaching, but that's it's a tough thing for somebody to go through.
Well, especially if their whole, you know, personality and life is revolved around their success as an athlete. You know, more well-rounded people who have other interests, hobbies, family, and, you know, they seem to make that transition a little easier. Some of them already have an idea what they want to do before they're done, whether it's coaching, whether it's running a business. You know, some go into the union and they want to represent players as agents. There's a lot of different spin-off careers they could do, and a lot of them start thinking about that before their time is over. But then you have some guys that were superstars and just they know they don't ever have to work again. And I know we all would love to have that problem, figuring out what to do with the rest of your life when you have more money than you can spend. But as you say, you know, for some of them, there is a psychological hurdle to clear, and they have to feel like they're doing something of value. And I'm sure that, you know, Josh is a smart guy, and he'll figure out something. I know he does want to spend some time with his family. He's got some young kids, and that should be a priority too.
Yes, absolutely, and he'll enjoy it for a while, and then we'll keep our eye on what's going on there. So, Ken Gernick, thank you so much. It was a good conversation. Appreciate your time.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game streamed live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.